Not for the first time on our little wireless program, we are about to sing the praises of Trove, that quite wonderful digital archival collection. It's unique in the world in some respects. British researcher Liz Stainforth has spent half of last year at Melbourne Uni on a postdoctoral fellowship specifically to study Trove. And she was struck by how widely the Australian public has embraced it. It's not just beloved by librarians and academics, not by any means. Liz specialises in digital heritage and is now on a fellowship at Leeds University. And she joins us from that city. Liz, welcome. And in Canberra, I'm delighted to welcome Alison Dellett. Alison is the National Library's Assistant Director General of National Collections Access. And, you know, she's the grand fromage of Trove. To you first, Liz, you got quite a surprise working in Australia when you told people, total strangers, what you were doing, studying Trove, because they instantly knew what you were talking about.
Yes, that hadn't been my experience previously. I had worked on other comparable systems, specifically in the European context, a European Commission funded project, Europeana, which I know Trove does have links with. But I think possibly because of the more geographically distributed nature of that project, when I mentioned to people I worked on Europeana, I didn't always get the level of name recognition, so I would have to go further into what I was doing for people to really understand it. On the other hand, when I arrived in Australia to start my postdoc at the University of Melbourne, I immediately, whenever I mentioned Trove, people would be sort of, their response was, oh, I use Trove all the time. Oh, yes, I've used that, you know, once or twice. Oh, yes, it's my go-to when I'm beginning research, especially people that were doing history research into various aspects of Australian life and culture. But I got a really strong sense as I sort of got further into the research that people were using this further afield as well, and had the opportunity of meeting people that have used it to do their family history. Family historians love Trove. So I would speak at places and people would say, oh, Liz Stainforth speaking next on Trove. I love Trove. You know, like that would always be the response. I would say almost without exception.
Hence you call it a rare beast, a digital heritage platform with popular appeal. Alison, would you give us a quick sense of what can be found on Trove for the few of us who haven't physically ventured there yet? And I'm one of them.
Yet. Really? Now that's challenging.
I'm surrounded by people who are Trovians, but
So Trove is a online portal into Australia's collections. So obviously it has the collection of the National Library accessible there, but it also has collections of libraries, museums, galleries, historical societies across Australia. What you find in Trove is largely a wide terrain of what we call digital content. We have 2/3 of Australia's newspapers that were published before 1955. You can search the articles and the content of that. We have more than 3 million images, digital, many of which are fully digital accessible, and you can see. We have hundreds and thousands of digital maps that you can use to navigate. We also have hundreds of thousands of books and tens of thousands of journals and digitised journal articles.
So what about the medium where I'm working? Does it can it access radio?
We've got some audio, but we don't have a great deal. We're working with the National Film and Sound Archive to bring content in, but at this stage, we certainly have ABC archival materials. We've got quite a lot of transcripts of ABC radio programs that are discoverable through the service as well.
So it links to other marvellous places as well as being a marvellous place itself. I understand that one of the reasons for Trove's appeal is that the user gets results, you go searching, and you're very often rewarded almost certainly with more than you expected.
Oh, absolutely. I think the reason that Trove evokes so much passion, and we really are blessed to have such a strong and passionate user base, is because people find things that are very personal to them in there. By enabling keyword searching, you can come to Trove, you can just plug in the name of a family member, you can plug in the name of a town that you've lived in, of something that is precious and dear to you. You'll be able to see immediately all of the coverage that we have that relates to that, any mention of it in a newspaper, any journals that talked about what you're doing, maps of that location, pictures from a range of different periods. So for people, Trove becomes a very personal location. It, often I think our cultural institutions can feel quite impersonal or intimidating sometimes.
But I understand that a lot of aggregators are not as user-friendly as you are.
No, I think that we have worked very hard to make Trove something that you can simply put a term in and, as I said, get something back very quickly that's meaningful, and then you'll go on the rest of the journey.
Who do we beatify? Who is it that we should be talking to the Vatican about to get sainthood?
Like all successful projects, Philip, there's a large team behind it, and there has been over the course of the last 10 years now that Trove's been in development of some
sort. So it's no point putting you up for sainthood, Alison.
No. I think I rest on the shoulders of giants.
Okay. Now, Liz, I want you to tell me about how you met a stranger on a plane.
This is an
invasion of your privacy, but
it was one of those occasions where, again, it brought home to me how easy and user-friendly Trove is. I was actually on the plane to Canberra on my way to visit the Trove team, and I was sitting next to a woman. She asked me what I was doing. We got talking. I mentioned Trove. She was someone that hadn't heard of Trove, but we were able to sit together on the plane. I pulled it up and said, you know, a lot of people use this for their family history. She kind of got it straight away because it uses quite, the functionality is quite straightforward. It's a search bar. And she immediately put in the name of her grandfather and was able to pull up some digitized newspapers that that mentioned him, and she knew it was him because of various other contextual factors. It was just so interesting to see that immediate connection. And she was like, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna continue this when I get home." The fact that it was just a conversation on a plane could lead to that beginning, that that opening up.
I'm reminded of a conversation like I had years ago with Arthur C. Clarke on the program, who famously made the point that one of the tests of new technology is that it has to feel like magic. Well, this one meets that requirement, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it is a little magical moment for people when they are able to connect that closely through just a simple search with aspects of their history.
Now, Alison, you refuse to accept the gong I'm offering you here. So let me ask you this. Where did the money come from? It sounds like it's cost squillions.
One of the things that I think the National Library is proudest of is that we have built Trove from entirely within our existing funds, our existing budget. We haven't had any special project funding to maintain Trove.
Well, it's all the more magical.
Yes, and it is, I think, like a lot of cultural institutions, it gets increasingly challenging to, we have such opportunities in the digital terrain, but it does mean that we have to make resourcing decisions that mean that we can't always do the other things that we've always done. At the moment, we're actually attempting to give Trove a bit of a makeover. We're looking to release a new version, a new look and feel for Trove to make it just a little bit more user-friendly and easier to navigate from bits of content to others. And we're doing that thanks to funding that's come through the APS Modernisation Fund. We were given $16.4 million over 4 years. But that money does run out in June 2020. And at this stage, unless we have some other source of funds, we will need to start looking at maintaining rather than enhancing or building upon the service.
Is there a significant amount of Aboriginal language material, Alison?
We have, this is an area of focus for us at the moment. One of the things that we are proudest of in the library is that we do have usage of Trove in remote communities that are largely have Aboriginal populations and also in the Torres Strait. And we get that usage because often the content, the kinds of stories that Trove tells through photographs, through maps and through journal articles, and through the newspapers, are forms of history that are often Aboriginal people have trouble turning up. One of the biggest things we've got is language material that exists in different languages. So we know there's a huge hunger for that material, and one of the main foci of our redevelopment is to make that much more accessible to Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islanders.
If I can go back to you, Liz, there is a system in the United States, of course. Does it measure up? Is it as wonderful as Trove?
Yes, well, I mentioned Europeana earlier, which is the European Commission-funded project, and Digital Public Library of America is a US-based effort, and I work with a researcher there on that aggregator. I would say that it's a very different kind of effort, and it has a different funding model. It's funded by a consortium of there are funders through libraries and other organisations and charitable trusts. I think that it has been somewhat successful. Again, I don't think there's the level of name recognition, and I think that it's not the fact that it's not hosted by a national institution. That's a choice that was made at the beginning, and that's a choice that's made for various reasons, but the fact that ITROVE does have a home in the National Library, I can see that has consolidated some of the energies around it and perhaps led to greater success for the project.
Although I'm an atheist, Alison, I worship the National Library, St. Alison, I'm sorry. I wonder, we should point out that it's not just individuals who use the services, and you get groups, you know, people might be fanatics about trams, for example.
One of the greatest things we've done with Trove is that because when we create automated versions of the text that we've digitised, it's often full of errors. We open that up to the community, and the community come in and they can see the image of the article and they can make sure that the index text matches that image. And that's caused these communities to develop around particular kinds of articles. So we have tram enthusiasts who will find all the articles on trams, and they'll talk to each other about what content we have on trams, and they'll make sure that it's really accessible to other people. It's the same with aircraft. We have people who go through Trove and use the photographs to get the tags, the codes for each aircraft, and make sure that's recorded in a way that can be searched by someone else who's researching that form of aircraft. So Trove really creates community in that way as well. We see people who don't just use it as individuals, but really connect into communities with passion around particular elements of Australian life.
I'm quite fond of Wikipedia, but I'm often astonished at how inadequate it can be or how wrong. Because you're going to original materials, that accuracy doesn't really pose a problem.
No, it's not in the same way. Obviously, there were times where our original sources got things wrong, and there's attitudes and processes change over time as well. But often you'll find, for example, if a newspaper article did get something factually wrong, that someone will come in and put a comment at the bottom that says, in this article, you know, 3 years later, this article was corrected, or there was a retraction printed later that you can check on this date. So that's part of the usefulness too, is that there is a skill in being able to identify who is saying this and what context they're saying it in. And in the era, I guess, where we live with fake news and we live with not being able to trace provenance, it's really important for us that Trove identifies what you're reading and where it comes from.
Look, I'd like you to explain to me, if you would, Liz, to an ancient broadcaster and a computer illiterate, how do I do it? What do I do? How do I get connected
to Trove?
Yeah.
Okay, so you would just go to the Trove homepage, and then you would be able, under the search bar at the top of the homepage, that you would be able to use to put in your search query. Trove is, it has a combination of functionalities. The one I'm partly interested in is aggregation. Aggregation meaning the way that Trove can pull together records from across different organisations. So the National Library, but other state libraries, museums and archives, and smaller organisations as well. And so when you're searching in Trove, then you get a list of results. And Trove currently organises those results according to zones. So you have books, journals, diaries, you have people and organisations, music, maps and images. And if you just do a simple search in the search bar when you get onto the landing page, Trove will bring up all the results organised according to those zones. So that's partly why it's quite easy then to navigate across these different areas where Trove's pulling from.
Well, I'll have a crack at it and report back. Look, Liz, thank you for that. Liz Stainforth, a scholar who looks at digital heritage collections currently at Leeds University, and that's where she is as we speak to her on this occasion, and St Alison Dellett is the big cheese on the Trove project at the Australian National Library. Liz, Alison, thank you both for coming on. A delight. Oh, Alison, you've just won a koala stamp for the Enterprise.